The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I actually have the AP style book behind me here in my office as well. This literally, and people often don't use the word literally correctly, this is literally George Orwell's 1984 newspeak, that we will change the meaning of words so that no one will ever be able to have a sensible conversation with anyone. We know what riots are. When you turn on the TV and you see some of the things I talked about earlier with Molotov cocktails and small businesses burning down and people assaulting people in their cars and blocking traffic and all of those things, those are riots. Why are they trying to change words? And they're trying to change words so that you can't calibrate. You won't be able to have a conversation with your neighbor because your language won't even be the same.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, a little discussion there from Fox News on the downplay of words with negative connotations in, of course, the AP's style guidebook. I have to tell you about this. This is a pretty wild story. But first, good afternoon. It's good to be back here with you today. I say it all the time, right? Words are powerful. They are powerful, and they have a profound impact. And many of these words we use today have been co-opted. They have a totally different meaning than their origins. But we can get into that coming up. Before I begin, I just want to thank John Harper for what has been just a phenomenal job. It feels so good to be able to take a couple days and leave the show in good hands. And John is such a pro. I had an opportunity to speak to him a little bit earlier today just to thank him for sitting in. I know Maggie and Tom, my left and right hand here, have really been able to keep the show going. I hope you enjoy, John. I'm sure he'll be back again in the not-too-distant future. I was away for a couple days with a bunch of my colleagues, got to hang out with Father Rocky, with Patrick Madrid and his wonderful wife, and so many of the other people that I get to work with here. Peter Atkinson, who you'll hear more about, he'll be stopping by my show in the days ahead. He's one of our colleagues who's exceptionally talented, and I want to introduce him to you because I think there's a resource that we have here at Relevant Radio that not a lot of people know about, but that'll be coming up. But it was great. It was. We had what they called an executive retreat. So we had a time to be together, to pray together, to discuss business, to hang out, to do a lot of different things. And Patrick and I both were saying how much we enjoy being behind the mic and being able to hang out with you. It's always a great time, you know, always a great time. Well, I can talk to you a little bit more about that as well coming up. But feel free to join me today. I want to give you the number. Anytime you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. It's 888-914-9149. I've been away from the chaplet here, so we will pray the chaplet live today. So tell your friends and those who really need some extra prayer power coming up. We'll pray that chaplet in just about an hour. All right. We're seeing great things from that. But let me get you up to speed on a lot of what's going on. There's a lot unfolding around the culture. A little later in the show, I'll fill you in on a Eucharistic miracle. I've witnessed a Eucharistic miracle. That's a whole other story. It's actually been documented. And I have a friend who actually recorded it. He was actually filming this Eucharistic miracle. And there's one that, you know, I think might surprise you. We'll actually link over to the video so you can see it for yourself. You can determine what you think. All right. Of course, Mega Millions are coming out. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. But let me start off today just by filling you in on a follow-up to a story we've talked about. Remember, I asked you to pray for the security of our Supreme Court justices. Remember a few weeks back when that man was arrested in the middle of the night near Justice Kavanaugh's home? You know, he drove, 1,000 miles, thousands of miles. And his intention was to assassinate the justice. And thank God nothing happened, right? There was very little outcry over that. You know, you would have thought that, my gosh, I would fill headlines all over the country. Well, there's new information surfacing. I don't know if you heard this yet. The FBI released new details on that story. And it turned out this man, anybody who does this clearly is not in their right mind, right? This guy's name was Nicholas Roski, I think. He wasn't out just to kill Brett Kavanaugh. And this is now just coming to light. His intention was to kill all three justices that night. And to me, that is absolutely shocking. And remember how long it took to get any sort of security, really, to protect the family members of these justices, let alone them? Roski was in a conversation with someone on a chat room. It's a site called Discord. And he told them that one dead justice is not going to be enough. He said that I should be able to get at least one, but I'm planning on killing three. He wanted to kill three. And he was asked, I think it was Reddit, whether or not Kavanaugh being removed would help advance the cause of women. That's one of the things he said. But he thought if he killed three justices, he could impact the court for a generation. And, you know, he's right. Just imagine if three Supreme Court justices were killed or, God forbid, they died, right? And let's say they were conservative ones. You know, if you had Amy Coney Barrett or Kavanaugh or any of the others who tilted in the way of Roe. Imagine Joe Biden now having the ability to nominate him and the wrangling that would pursue in terms of new Supreme Court nominations. It would be quite an ordeal. We know that the Democrats have spoken quite frequently about packing the court, which just from a personal perspective, I don't think it's a good idea. Not that the number of the Supreme Court has not changed over the years. It has. But even Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said, it's a good number, right? So I say we stick with that. But anyway, that's a little bit of insight for you there. Continue to pray for this man. Clearly, he is not right. Let's pray for our elected officials on two things. One, for their conversion, and two, for their protection. I mean, they are there to serve you and to serve me, right? And let's pray that they do that with a servant heart. There was an exclusive news story that came to me. And my producer, Tom Siskevich, I want to credit him for this. And we want to share this with you. I don't know if this news has even hit the wires yet. He had the opportunity to learn last night that the Archdiocesan headquarters in Portland, Oregon, it was targeted by anarchists. Now, this has not been reported on. There was a very brief interview with Bishop Alexander Sample. And he said he saw these images of red paint being splattered on the sidewalks and on the building and just hard graffiti spray painted all over the place. And he also showed him an image of graffiti on the side of Our Lady of Sorrows parish there in Portland as well. And he said that right now, Portland, and this state is really in a state of dysfunction. Portland's becoming kind of a mecca for very secular young people. And he's been working with priests and seminarians of his archdiocese to try to help just reach out to them. He says they're very misguided. So he asks, could you please assist us with your prayers? Now, you don't have to be there. You don't have to support financially. But when you hear these things, please pray. Pray for the entire city of Portland. According to Christopher Rufo of the Manhattan Institute, I was reading him. He said that the Portland Public Schools, they've actually launched a war against the gender, you know, the gender binary, and they adopted a radical new curriculum teaching students I'm going to quote this, so this is not me. I want you to be aware. He says, quote, Portland schools have launched a war against the gender binary and adopted a radical new curriculum teaching students to subvert the sexuality of white colonizers and begin exploring the infinite gender spectrum. The infinite gender spectrum. Boy, give me a break, right? I mean, you talk about confusion. The infinite gender spectrum, white colonizers, subvert the sexuality of them. He says that he's obtained a whole cache, if you will, cachet of documents from a source inside the Portland Public Schools that actually exposes the whole nature of this curriculum. And, you know what? And I want to pause on this point for just a second. Who does it target? Right. It targets our kids, right? It targets the family. Who do you smell behind that? Who do you see behind that? Who do you feel behind that? It's the enemy. It's Satan. It's the evil one. This is one of the forefronts. This is part of this battle. He hates family and he hates life. And we are seeing the infiltrations on so many levels, whether it's in the womb or whether it's in our schools, whether it's trying to indoctrinate kids at young ages or confuse them about gender. He went on to say this. He said, the lessons seek to turn the principles of academic queer theory into identity formation programs for elementary school students. It's been adopted in many of the district's K-5 classrooms. Let's just go back. Think about when you were in fifth grade. Think about when you were in first, second, third, or fourth, right? These lessons seek to turn principles of academic queer theory into identity formation programs for elementary schools. You know, as a parent, you should be outraged. You should be well aware what your kids are being indoctrinated with, what they're being taught with, what they're being exposed to. And you have to do everything you can. It is your duty as a parent. It is your duty. You are the primary educator of your child. You have to protect our kids. Our kids are on the front lines right now. I mean, you and I can take the slings and we can take the arrows, right? You can take it in the office and maybe in the higher levels of academia. I mean, we can deal with this. We might be ostracized or ridiculed or mocked or belittled or look like we're strange for our Christian principles, the views that we hold. But fundamentally, our kids are vulnerable. They don't know this. They have no idea. No idea. It was up to you to protect them. And they're not the only ones in this. I mean, just one final thought of this. If you work in newspapers, right, your Bible for style is the Associated Press style book, right? So check out what else has happened just in terms of kind of an extension of how this has infiltrated the culture. The AP is completely changing things around. The AP right now, they are instructing writers to avoid terms. And again, I don't want to bring you down. I really don't. I'm pulling back the veil, right? I'm trying to pull back the curtain so you can see the person pulling and turning the knob so you can know what's going on in the culture at large. So when you see something that doesn't sound right, feel right, and you know that it's fundamentally wrong, you're going to know what's going on behind the scenes, right? So you have the AP telling their writers, hey, don't use terms like biological sex. What's so wrong with biological sex, right? Male or female hormones. You can't use that. Don't females have hormones? And men, sex change. Oh, no, don't use the word sex change either. Can't use that. Let's replace them with substitutes like sex assigned at birth. What? I was born male, period. My chromosomes tell me that, right? Well, Drew, you're a woman, okay? We're assigning that to you at birth. So that would be my sex. It's not true. It's not reality, right? They say, replace these terms, instead of biological sex, with sex assigned at birth. So you can't say that's a male or a female. Can't look between the legs. Oh, he's a boy. You know, I was with my wife for all five deliveries. And, you know, doctors pretty quickly can identify whether I had a girl or a boy, right? My wife had a girl or a boy. Pretty simple. No, you can't say that. Now you have to use sex assigned at birth. Specific hormone names. Instead of sex change, you have to use terms like gender transition. So this is the AP, the Associated Press. So the guide also deems certain word slurs, using a transgender person's previous name. Oh, that's a slur. You know, Walt Heyer, who's been a guest of this program, a friend of this program, he went through a gender transition. He was born a male. He went through some abuse and ultimately felt that he meant to be a woman. And he transitioned to Jenna somebody, I forget what the last name was. And the guys that he would work with, I think he worked at some motor company, they would call him Walt. Today, that would be a slur. Today, you can't do that. Today, that would be downright offensive. You know, you've got to go by whatever the current name is. Otherwise, you know, it's wrong. It's a slur using a transgender person's previous name. Or they call it a dead name. For example, that would fall under that particular category. So one final story, and then I want to change gears. I want to tell you about something else that's happening. Just think about that. I'm going to leave it at that. I want to give you a little hope today. We got a lot of great stuff coming up. But I've been away for a couple of days. I see this stuff, and it frustrates me. I don't know how you feel about it. Doesn't it frustrate you to live in this world, know your kids and your children's children are going to be growing up in this type of stuff? Let's get it right. Let's correct it. We can do it. We can do it, right? I was watching, I saw a news report. Now, I'll just very quickly hit on this. I want to tell you about Nancy Pelosi. A lot of people for years wonder how members of Congress have, you know, how they've become so wealthy, right? How they made these stock trades. Well, they often have exclusive information, right? There's a resource out there called Punchbowl News. It's an outlet, and they reported just recently that House Democrats are announcing a proposal next month to ban lawmakers and their spouses and their senior staff from trading stocks. We'll see whether or not that happens. Here's a little bit more. Here's some thoughts from the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy on the legislation behind this.
I think it's ironic that the Speaker of the House now talks about bringing up a bill at the very end of the term of Congress. So her husband could trade all the way through, but now it becomes a crisis? I think the Speaker of the House has greater determination of what comes to the floor, what gets out of the committee, And her husband didn't just trade stock, he traded options. I think what her husband did was wrong. If you say, when she said she never told him anything, I know they spent their time together overseas, and when they're coming back, I'm sure she had conversations on the phone about what was going to be on the floor. I'm sure she had conversations about what the chip version finally looked at. I'm sure she had those conversations. I don't know if he was able to hear them or not, but I think we need to bring trust back to this institution. I think we have to do a thorough investigation and look at what is the proper role for members of Congress and what influence they have. And I don't think the proper way to do this is Nancy Pelosi writing the bill, because we have proven that she can't do that. It should be a bipartisan manner, and we should look at it through committee.
Yeah, I just think about how tempting that is. Just a final thought on this, kind of a moral perspective on it. And you might be in a situation right now at work where you have some information that could maybe benefit you. Maybe it's not moral or ethical, you know, to have that. Or maybe you're going to invest in something that's not moral or ethical. You know, I can't, husband and spouse, they talk. You can't tell me that, you know, that information's not exchanged. If you look at his track record for trading, off the charts. I mean, I wish I was a friend of his. You know, I wish he, you know, I knew how he was trading, you know. The bottom line, I mean, even when it's easy and it can benefit us, you always have to do what's moral and you always have to do what's right. You know, so just think about that. There's a lot of different circumstances we can point to that you might be facing right now. Maybe God's talking to you. Hey, when you think of Saudi Arabia, you might think of two things, right? Oil and sand, maybe Mecca. Well, you might think about something else. I came across a story. I knew nothing about this, kind of a cool concept, and I thought I'd share it with you. You might hear about this soon. A 100-mile-long city, right? A 100-mile-long city. There's a work in progress there in the northwestern part of the country on a project that's simply called The Line, right? And it's what it would be is three-layer city with things like sewer and water forming in the first layer and a transportation system on the second layer, and then above ground would be the living and the business area. No cars or roads. It's only going to be about 650 feet wide, but just a little more than 100 miles long, and it's supposed to be home to about 9 million people. I saw this in the Daily Wire. They reported that it's supposed to be powered by 100% renewable energy and preserve about 95% of the surrounding land for nature. So good thing if it works, right? The city's going to be built as a series of individual nodes connected by high-speed rail system, and you can go from one end to the other in about 20 minutes. That's how fast this thing is. But you know, all the needs, all the services, everything that you need is within a 5-mile walking distance from where you live. So a little bit of exercise, everything's there from the school, the hospital, to the pharmacy, to the grocery store, right? But the reaction to it online, both from the left and the right, has been very dismissive. I was a little shocked by this. There was a CBS News anchor, a guy named John Dickerson. He's been on the program with me in the past. He says, this remake of Blade Runner is a little disturbing. So I've invited Philip Best to stop by. He's an architecture professor at the University of Notre Dame and specializes in what's called urbanism, just to fill us in on what's happening. Professor, good afternoon. Good to have you with me today.
Thanks very much. It's nice to be here.
In a nutshell, explain to us what urbanism is, and then maybe, you know, your view on what some are calling the perfect city, clean energy and everything you need within a 5-minute walk. Give me your take.
I would say that urbanism is a little bit of a problematic term because it sounds ideological, but I think that the approach to it comes from a long tradition of thinking that human beings flourish. We live our best lives in cities, and that long history of that, the history of Western culture, thinking about that, going back to Aristotle, and that's kind of where that comes from. But generally, we think of cities historically, pre-modern cities, as mixed-use walkable environments that are spatial in character, that have a kind of hierarchy of spaces and building types that combine economic activity, residences, productive activity, sacred space, acknowledgement of its place in the cosmos, right. And it's a kind of a complex order that's a cooperative human enterprise, and modernity kind of changed that.
So, your view of this—I don't know whether it's an experiment. I think there have probably been other attempts to create these perfect self-sustaining type of cities. 20-minute walk to any place, or 20 minutes from one end to the other, 5-minute walk to anything you want, almost sounds utopian. Why are people viewing it like this is dystopian? And what are the pros, what are the cons of this, and how likely is it to become a reality?
Well, in a way, this is kind of modernism dot two, because the ambitions are similar to the modernist movement that emerged in the beginning of the 20th century proposed a kind of utopian view for human society in the aftermath of the, in the context of the Industrial Revolution. And it was a different kind of utopia than the kind of vision of the best life that preceded it, which I would in some ways say was integral with Christendom in Western culture, certainly. But it was a sort of secular utopia that was proposed, and it didn't work. And we went through a period where there's a kind of recognition that it hasn't worked. And it's interesting to see that the idea is popping up again in this context.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. I'd love to see how it pans out. I mean, 9 million people in a 100-mile stretch. It's interesting. We'll see whether or not it works. Doesn't seem that wide either. But, it almost, to me, as I was reading the story, feels like this is an idea being imposed rather than allowing a city just to grow organically. I know there's always concern about urban sprawl, but what do you see as a chance for success of this particular project?
Well, I'm highly skeptical, as most people seem to be who've taken a look at the project. And I think that you put your finger on exactly what the problem is that, first of all, you need to understand, in looking through the website that's advertising, it's really it's an advertisement for a real estate, a speculative real estate venture. They are soliciting businesses and donors to try to make this a possibility. But you're absolutely right about the anthropology of it, if you will. It doesn't view human beings as agents. Human beings as subject to the plans of utopian thinkers, and that's, we have some history with that, and it hasn't turned out very well.
That's true. Well, Professor, I want to thank you. I'm up against the clock here. I got to leave it right there, but I'm grateful for your time and for your analysis, and hopefully you and I can talk again soon. Appreciate you being here.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks very much.
No, good. You have final thoughts? Professor?
Yes.
You go right ahead. Yeah, go right ahead. I'll give you final thoughts.
Cities don't just happen. Cities are historically a product of human agency, but they're done at a certain kind of scale. So I think that what's scary about this project is there's a lot of good ideas. The 5-minute walk, the proximity to nature, the mix of uses, all of that is the language of neo-traditional urbanism. It's the language of historic urbanism, but it's being proposed at such a scale that it really does have kind of totalitarian overtones. So that's a problematic thing.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Professor. Great to have you again. Look forward to
Thanks
next time.
Much.
God bless you. That's Professor Philip Bass. I think he's right on. I think he's clear thinking, and I think couldn't have said it better. I got to take a short pause when we come back, and we'll see what happens there. I wonder if it's going to go. I do agree with him on this final thought, too, just from an economics perspective. They're soliciting businesses. It's a major experiment. A lot of people are skeptical. It does seem somewhat dystopian. I'll see whether or not it makes it. I think there's some human nature that, if you take a look at it through that perspective as well, there'll be problems that will arise that I don't know if it's been fully contemplated. When we come back, though, stay with me. I want to fill you in on something that I didn't have a chance to talk to you about while I was away from the mic for a couple days, and that is this contraception bill. I'll give you a quick explainer on this. The Respect for Marriage Act. Mary Rice Hasson is going to be stopping by, and, of course, we'll take your calls and questions. Feel free to join me. Don't go away. Be right back.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Despite the Pope's admonition to safeguard marriage, over the next 50 years, people became so confirmed in the use of contraception that, as the Pope warned, not only did sex become severed from procreation, but marriage as well. As modern man grew more materialistic and self-centered, placing less emphasis on children, the question of limiting the size of families erupted into mainstream consciousness. One group in particular was blazing the trail for contraception and birth control to be accepted, and that group was the Rockefeller family. John D. Rockefeller Sr. made his money in the oil industry. The Rockefellers abided by the philosophy that limited family size was ideal for the common, ignorant masses. Much of the family's money flowed to the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, known as the American Birth Control League in the early days of the birth control movement.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, early days of contraceptives. That's a little history there. The origin of modern contraceptives. And coming up in a minute, Mary Grace Hasson is going to stop by. But I'll give you a little history very quickly here because I've been away, and I do want to talk to you very briefly about this this contraception bill that's out there. And, you know, I know there's a turnoff for some people. You might think, look, I'm Catholic, Drew, and, you know, we use contraception. I can't afford to have another kid, you know, and, you know, all my kids use it. I wouldn't want them getting pregnant right now. They can't afford to have a child. I mean, all sorts of excuses come along the way. So I know there's a certain numbness, a certain desensitization to where some people are on this issue. Catholic teaching is very clear. If you want to read a great encyclical, and if I have time later, I'll go through a little bit of what Pope Paul VI said in his encyclical Humanae Vitae. It was prescient. It was really prophetic in some respect in terms of what he saw looming in the future of the world if we embrace this. But it goes back. It goes back all the way to the 1930s. You know, in the Anglican Church, they declared that, you know, it was okay for married couples to use contraception. Okay, oh, that's great, right? So then what happens after that? It's 1930. The Anglicans get on board with that. The Catholics still didn't. Then we have the invention of the pill 30 years later. It was in the 1960s. And then, you know, the judicial approval of contraception for married couples in a very important, you know, case, Griswold versus Connecticut in 65. And then what happens? A couple years later, six, 7 years later, 1972, the judicial approval of contraception for unmarried couples. You had Roe v. Wade in 73, which is a byproduct, I think, of contraception. I mean, it's all just a very slippery slope. But 4 years later, after Roe v. Wade, after, you know, 4 years later, with this decision to allow 16-year-olds to have access to contraception, Lawrence v. Texas in 2003 struck down the laws against sodomy, and then we have the approval of so-called same-sex marriage in 2015. So where do we go from here, right? What's next? It's all rooted in contraception. I think the next thing is polyamory, polygamy. You're going to see all sorts of stuff. We see this whole gender ideology coming in. But I think if you go back, you can see the tentacles of it. You can see the poison that has infiltrated the culture, and it's sick. There's a blindness. Margaret Sanger, I'm sure you're familiar with her, notorious eugenist, advocate of abortion, ethnic cleansing in some respects. You know, she was a racist. You can go through the whole thing, a champion of contraception. Here's some audio from an interview with her and how she regarded the issue of natural law and the church. Listen.
Well, I think that the opposition is mainly from the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church.
Of the church.
Well, now hierarchy.
Of the hierarchy of the church. Now, the violation of the natural law, according you certainly can take no issue with the natural law as the hierarchy of the Catholic Church regards it.
Well, I certainly do take issue with it. And I think it's untrue, and I think it's unnatural.
Well, let me ask you.
Nothing bears it out that it's an unnatural attitude to take. And how do they know? I mean, after all, they're celibates. They don't know love. They don't know marriage. They know nothing about bringing up children or any of the marriage problems of life. And yet they speak to people as if they were God.
You know, I think we have to pray for her soul. She was wounded herself. And there's a very important statement that somebody once said to me, and it made a lot of sense, that hurt people hurt people. And you can see what one life can do and the ripple effect of her reach and what she's done. I don't necessarily blame her. We need to pray for her. I go back to the acceptance of a real moral evil. And that's you know, this artificial contraception, playing God. God's the author of life. It's a gift. It's not a curse. It's not a burden. And there are consequences for, you know, having sex outside of marriage and all the litany. I'm not here to preach at you. I just want to give you some perspective on that. But look, you take a look at the progression over the past, 85 plus years. Started out with a church, with an Anglican church, saying, no, it's okay for married couples to use contraception. The Catholic Church didn't. And of course, who's the greatest adversary of the Catholic Church? The evil one. Satan hates the church because it does what? Defends marriage. It defends life. But this kind of progression that you are seeing in our own day, from contraception to killing a child in the womb to redefining marriage, what comes next? I think the erosion of religious liberty. I think possibly even persecution. That might sound far-reaching, right? But could you imagine in 1930 thinking it was okay to kill a baby, a pregnant mother killing her baby in a womb? No, that'd be outrageous. So don't be disillusioned. Who knows what looms in the future? There's been a couple bills introduced. That's the reason I'm talking about this today, into the House. They're meant to put into law things that people on the left see as in danger based on a consenting opinion from Justice Thomas. And we've talked about this in the Dobbs case. His opinion in the court, his opinion actually said that the court should look at Obergefell. That's the decision that redefined marriage, right? We should overlook Lawrence v. Texas. I just talked about it, or Griswold versus Connecticut. Obergefell defined marriage and is being addressed as the so-called Respect for Marriage Act, which, of course, doesn't respect marriage at all. But now they're gunning for contraception. And it's not just a matter of saying that contraception is going to be legal and you can use it as a consenting adult. That's not enough, right? That's never enough. It goes beyond that. The bill is going to impose this as a right. That's what it wants to impose, it as a right in the law. So you're saying, well, I don't get it, Drew. Why is that so important? Because it has consequences for religious liberty. It also includes sterilization as contraception. Sterilization is contraception, and this has tremendous implications for youth. There are, of course, implications for the whole transgender debate. I mean, it goes on and on. Look, I've invited Mary Rice Hassan, who's a fellow in the at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She directs the Catholic Women's Forum, to stop by to give us a perspective. One of the most eloquent speakers that I get to talk to on these cultural issues. I always love to have her. Before I go to her, I want to give you a website that she found. She started a new website. It's called personandidentity.com. And I think this will be a great help for you. So if you have book tabs, you know, you have certain religious things you need to check out, bookmark this one, personandidentity.com. The purpose of it is to help Catholics understand the church's teaching on issues, especially to help parents deal with children who may maybe be misled by gender ideology. She joins me today. It's good to have you back. Good afternoon, Mary.
Thank you so much, Drew. It's wonderful to be with you.
Oh, boy. Let's start with the bill, all right? We can go from there and talk about a lot of this other stuff, the ripple effect of so much of this, this confusion. The current status of the bill, where are we right now? How likely is it to ever become reality?
Well, the House passed it. It's probably unlikely it's going to go forward in the Senate. But these things are very fluid, partly because the messaging that has been used to promote this bill and how it succeeded in going through the House with 8 Republican votes in favor of it is to frame this as a bill that simply keeps the status quo. So in the wake of the Dobbs decision, which, as we know, struck down Roe and Casey and sent abortion back to the states, Justice Thomas's concurring opinion, spoke about the problems in the law of a long line of cases that have found this nebulous right to privacy and then that has then been expanded, as you so eloquently described earlier, to justify all sorts of things. So with that as the excuse, what we've seen is the Democrat Party has put forward this bill that is supposedly aims to make contraception itself a constitutional right or a right under this statute. But here's the problem. It's really a Trojan horse. It really just expands the radical agenda. It's not at all about the status quo because it defines contraceptives to include sterilization.
Yep.
And to include the use of hormones or devices that can be used that are supposedly contraceptives, but can be used for any purpose. So with that kind of a broad description, you can justify the use of, quote, contraceptive hormones for abortifacient purposes. Yeah. Yeah. You can justify the use of hormones for gender transitions, things like that. So this is really a Trojan horse. And I think that's the first thing people need to realize. This isn't status quo. This is about advancing a radical agenda.
Here's the thing. It's not, you know, Democrats are often the party of death. They push this type of stuff. There's a lot of Republicans who they don't seem to have a problem with the contraceptive aspect of this. Do they see the far-reaching implications of it for religious liberty?
Well, I think that's one reason why there weren't more Republicans supporting it, because the messaging on our side was getting out that this has huge religious liberty implications. So in this bill on contraception, it specifically says, it specifically frames anyone who, because of conscience reasons or even medical judgment, refuses to provide contraception or, in this case, sterilization, et cetera, as that being a refusal and a violation of constitutional rights. And it specifically says you cannot use the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, right, which protects the rights of religious believers from being forced or compelled in any way by the law to do something that violates their conscience or their deeply held religious beliefs. It specifically says you cannot use the Religious Freedom Restoration Act as a way to defend yourself against this, or as a reason why you're not going to provide what is demanded in this case, which again could be your standard contraceptives, it could be abortifacients, it could be hormones or devices used for gender transitions, etc. So it's I think the sterilization issue is really key, Drew, because under current law we see two things that the precedent involving contraception has said that minors of any age have a right to contraception. But then it also, because in our country we have had the use of sterilization for eugenic purposes and coerced purposes, we actually do have more protections under federal law under Title X for people undergoing sterilizing procedures. You have to be age 21 and you have to give your full informed consent, and then you have a waiting period. All of those protections to prevent coercion would fall by the wayside with this bill. So what it would allow is a minor, imagine a 16 or 17 year old who says on impulse, I never want to have kids, I want to get sterilized. They would have a right under this bill, without parental consent, to go and to demand sterilization, no cautions, no protections to prevent them from an impulsive decision or a coerced decision. So this is really a sterilized minors bill rather than a status quo bill concerning contraception.
Boy, you talk about evil. You're not kidding. My guest today, Mary Rice Hassett. Mary, stay with me for just a second. I have to take a short pause, but when we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to join us, I have a few minutes with Mary on the other side. Grab a pen and paper, too. I'll give you that website again. But feel free to join the conversation, share your perspective, ask your questions. The number to get in, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. It's good to be back with you again. The Chapel of Divine Mercy is also coming up in about 15 minutes. So tell a friend. We'll pray that live. I'll be right back. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, just about 10, 15 minutes away. We'll pray together. It's always good to do that. Kind of the highlight of my time with you. If you are just joining me, getting you plugged into legislation that will impact you, your children, those you love, and really the future of this country. Last weekend, if you're just joining me, the House passed a bill to codify same-sex marriage into federal law. 47 Republicans joined all the Democrats, you know, in favor, and a majority of the House, House's Catholic members, too, voted for the bill as well. And that always gave me pause. It's not about partisan politics. Okay, we know where the Democrats are going to stand on that particular issue when it comes to contraception and life and that whole thing, you know, to the culture of death. 47 Republicans across the aisle, a lot of Catholics as well. The Respect for Marriage Act now goes on to the Senate. So, you know, we need to pray. We need to pray that, you know, scales fall off people's eyes, that their hearts are softened, that they see the big picture, they do what is moral. Over 80 other organizations right now that I had read, 80 some have written to the Senate urging them to reject this bill. And why, right? Why? That's what we're talking about today. It is a bad bill. We need to respect life and the path that we go down when it comes to contraception and especially sterilization can be quite frightening. We have a history of it in our own country here. And if you know the history of forced sterilizations, it might actually shock you. I'm joined, though, this afternoon by Mary Rice Hassan, and it's good to have her with me today. It's always a delight to talk to her. She founded a website, and you can check it out. It's called personandidentity.com. Get great info there. Mary, thank you for being back here with us. We only have a few minutes here. And I see another threat in the culture, not just religious liberty and persecution and the things that are the byproduct of this, but I started the show today talking about how the AP is, you know, co-opting or taking over words or in suggesting how they are now used when it comes to gender. We see how this is being taught in schools, especially to our kids. Contraception and transgenderism don't seem to have a whole lot in common if you look at it objectively. So why would this bill include what you called kind of a backhanded definition of transgenderism in it? Unpack that for us.
It's because they are all related. The common ideology here is that the person gets to decide who they are and what makes them happy and should have a right to pursue in medicalized form whatever makes them happy, whether it's getting rid of a child in the womb, whether it's changing their bodies, whether it's contracepting, et cetera. So there's a unified philosophy behind this. And, you know, you had mentioned earlier the problem with the Respect for Marriage Act. We see the same thing there. I mean, this is all related because under that act, which, as you mentioned, passed with even more Republican votes and Catholic votes, it's such an open definition that marriage means nothing. And therefore, marriage can mean anything. And it will be imposed on all of us. And so this is really a huge, huge problem. And again, I think some of these politicians are just kind of jumping on what they see as the popular bandwagon, and they're being pushed back against the wall by the left's exaggeration of the impact of the Dobbs decision instead of standing our ground and saying, you know what, let's have discussions about these other issues, but let's not create these vague bills that are just going to push through all sorts of things.
Is there going to be some kind of privacy statement in it because of these legal matters involving sex seem to be based on a right to privacy that's not now found in the Constitution? How does that all work?
Right. So that was the court's rationale, was to find a right to privacy, and then under privacy it found all these rights. But these bills are aimed to simply establish these particular desires, whether it's contraception or same-sex marriage, et cetera, sterilization, as rights in and of themselves. And when you make something a right like that at the same time that you are negating the right to religious freedom and the right to express conscience objections, you are effectively requiring medical doctors, nurses, practitioners to be complicit in this, and you're going to end up paying for it in terms of federal funding. So it's just forcing others to not just support, but really to advance this anti-life agenda.
Well, Ken, you know, there's so much that's unfolding every day, you know, in Capitol Hill and our schools. people can be overwhelmed. And honestly, I feel like I drown in this stuff sometimes. And part of me doesn't even want to talk about it sometimes. I feel like this is all I do, you know, but it's so important that people have a well-formed mind and understanding of these issues because they can better navigate the challenges that will rise. It's every week. It seems like there's something new that comes across my radar that I, you know, we need to address. Personandidentity.com. Is that a helpful resource for this? What's that all about and how can people benefit?
Yeah, so personandidentity.com is puts forward Catholic teaching on the human person and helps to push back against gender ideology. So it's really focused on those topics, transgender issues, parental rights, and things like that. If someone's looking for a broader way to understand what's happening with these pro-life issues, you can go to Americans United for Life. You can go to Alliance Defending Freedom. You can go to the USCCB website, which has they have put out a number of very good statements, as well as most dioceses, because we've had a number of dioceses and groups of bishops that have come out with very strong statements against these kinds of bills. So there are lots of ways to form yourselves. I encourage Catholics, don't be reflexive about this. If you, in your own personal life, you've struggled with the issue of contraception or even understanding the church's position on same-sex marriage, you need to dig deeper. You need to dig deeper because these are serious issues that Amen. It's important to understand and get it right.
Amen to that. Hey, Mary, thank you for taking time out of your day. It's always great to talk to you.
Keep welcome.
Up your good work. I'll plug one more website for you. That's CatholicWomen'sForum.org, too. People can find some great resources right. there. We'll catch up soon, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
God bless Bye-bye. You. Always a delight to talk to her. Insightful, always has her finger on the pulse of what's unfolding in the culture. Just final thoughts on this issue for you, just in terms of contraception. I know you might hear these conversations. You might think, you know, that might be the case. But for me, yeah, it doesn't really, you know. I'm a good Catholic, Drew. I'm a good Catholic. Marriage is so critical for our country, for our society, for the future of society, for the human race. And when it's attacked, quite often we see the attack come in very direct ways. In other ways, I think it's very subtle and insidious. I think it's one of those insidious ways. Contraception is often presented as being a good, right? And people see it maybe as that. Oh, my kids, I can only afford to raise two, three, four, whatever the number is. If I had more, you know, how would that work? You know, or whatever excuse you use for it, right? But there's dire consequences, you know. I'll go back just to a pope who wrote an encyclical. I mentioned it when I began. Pope Paul VI. He wrote an encyclical called Humanae Vitae, and it's not long. I mean, it's such a simple read too. It's not this heady document that you're gonna think, oh, I got to slog through this. You know, the watershed moment was in the 1960s, and if you were old enough to remember those days, I was just I don't. If you take a look at the history of those days, maybe, you know, you're too young for that as well. Those were wild times, the 60s and particularly the 70s. The 60s was when all Protestant Christians accepted contraceptions within the bounds of marriage. Even a substantial number of priests and bishops and lay Catholics abandoned the church's teaching at that time. And the church had to really address this. And Pope Paul VI wrote Humanae Vitae, and he said a couple things. I have a minute or two here for you, but he saw what loomed in the future if we swallowed this poison pill. He said that widespread conjugal infidelity and the general lowering of morality would ensue, and that's what we see, right? You know, a few would deny the rates of divorce and family breakdown and of child abuse and of sexual transmitted diseases and abortion and out of wedlock births. Look at that today. That's through the roofs. That's exactly what he predicted would happen. He also said that men in general would lose respect for women, that they would no longer care for their, his words were physical or psychological equilibrium, to the point that women are considered as just mere instruments of selfish enjoyment and no longer as his respected and beloved companion. So in other words, you know, what do we see in the 60s and the 70s? And even today, contraception's marketed as liberating women. This will free you. You'll be just like a man. You know, it's like, who are the real beneficiaries of a woman on the pill? It's the man, right? You can argue the woman, But I think men have been able to use a woman as an object of their pleasure. And then with the widespread use of contraception, he says this has placed a very dangerous weapon in the hands of public authorities. And this is something I think we always have to be vigilant looking at. How, right? He says this will be a dangerous weapon in the hands of public authorities who take no heed of moral exegeses. He says as we've discovered, right? You take a look at what happened. I don't have time to get into all this, but eugenics didn't disappear with the Nazis, right? And their theories in 1945. We saw that with Margaret Sanger. We see that with population control policies. This is now accepted. Maggie and I were talking during the break. She was watching a video on YouTube about the third world countries. Quite often, population control policies are an accepted part of every foreign aid package. If we give somebody foreign aid, this is part of the deal. So it has really just led to human beings into thinking, you know, they have dominion over their own bodies. And it's one of the great lies today, right? The heart of contraception really is this assumption that fertility is an infection. It has to be attacked and controlled, right? It's so disoriented. Fertility is a gift and a blessing from God. Let's pray when I return. I'll be right back.